Been editing these.
How are you?
Contrary to popular belief.
How long have you been editing these?
It's forever. I've edited all of these except the first one and like the watch along.
Yeah, but what time period have you been editing these for?
What?
A year. I'm trying to say that it's our year anniversary.
That's right. It's March 21st when this comes out, and if you're listening in on release day, our 1 year anniversary is tomorrow of our first episode, so that's fucking cool. I wasn't gonna bring that up until later, but
hey, it's a good cold open, right?
I literally just spent 10 minutes writing this whole fucking outline of how this pod's gonna go, and you just shat on it. Just a big.
That's where that toilet paper roll went.
I'm going to leave that in and make no further acknowledgement. So, Cody, welcome. Yes. Before I ask you, this is an episode of Soon to be a Major Motion podcast. We are your hosts.
Cody Beck.
And Billy Beck. And this is a podcast where we watch movies that were based on books and we read books that were made into movies.
Wow, that was really well done.
I thought about that at the library the other day.
Ooh.
Yeah. So how have you been since our last episode?
Been good. Nothing too major happened. I have started a new challenge for myself in The Sims 4. So I've been doing that in the evenings. It's been fun.
Is that why I hear dice rolling all night?
Yes.
Why are you rolling dice, Cody?
So there's a creator that I follow on TikTok. For now.
Until they ban it.
Yeah. Her name is Hip Hip Renee. You should follow her. She's delightful. She does not know this podcast exists.
She will never hear that.
Nope. But she does a challenge she calls Roll for Build, which is where she will roll dice and it determines what she builds. And it's like the size of the house, how many Sims live there, the design, the color scheme, all that kind of thing. And I am not particularly strong at building because I went straight from The Sims 1 to The Sims 4 and there's just a lot more options. So this is a way to get me more familiar with building and to challenge myself a little bit. It's also like, it's that same thing where like teachers are like, the more rules you have, the easier it is for you to do something. It's exactly like that. Cause it's like, oh, I can only use X.
I am also the same brand of NeuroSpicy that completely sees the appeal of like, I can do anything in this game. Dice, tell me what to do.
Please don't call me out like that.
Listen, like I said, I completely understand it.
What about you? You have some,
I've had a week.
Yeah, you sure have.
Almost died the day the last episode came out.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Because I hit a pothole on my way into work and blew my rear left tire. Luckily, and I posted a picture of it on the socials, and there's a gash, a vertical gash in the sidewall of the tire. It is gone. And I am so thankful that A, I was already in the right lane. And B, it took maybe a quarter mile to a half mile to deflate to the point where I realized it was going flat. And I was able to safely get over and decided I'm not going to work today. And I went home after I spent $1,000 getting new tires.
Yay!
Because my dumbass went to the dealer thinking, I've got the warranty on this car. Guess what the warranty doesn't cover?
Tires!
My fucking tires! And if I were to just replace the one tire, I would have had to stay there all day. And it would have cost me, I think he said $350 or $400 for the tire. The cheapest tires for my car are $200 apiece.
Yeah, also they don't recommend that you only replace one.
Yeah, I wouldn't have replaced just the one. But if I'm already going to have to spend minimum $400, I'm going to just, you know, get a fresh pair of shoes on the car and go from there. So that's how my weekend started. Then I was, like, sick all weekend and just not having it. And if weekends end on Tuesday, which for the sake of my story, this weekend ended on Tuesday, the Philly Union crashed out of the CONCACAF Champions Cup in spectacular fashion.
That was not...
the worst ever defeat in club history, and the worst ever defeat of an MLS club to a Liga MX club in that competition. 6-0 at Pachuca.
Number one.
At least we won something, right? Fucking embarrassing, embarrassing performance on an international stage. And I love my club. You know I love my club. And that fucking sucked. Not as bad as the MLS Cup final, though.
Yeah, give it 6 months.
What, and then I'm gonna, like, cry about this one?
Yes.
No. No. If this was a final or even a semifinal, maybe, but this is, like, the round of 16. And we're already starting off the season, like, kind of shit. Like, let's just concentrate on the league right now. I wish we had the Open Cup to play in, but we don't because MLS is, fuckheads. Yeah, I'm not the happiest. I was telling you this the other night. There was a period in, like, October 2022 when being a Philly sports fan was the coolest fucking thing. Because there was a weekend that Premier League Live was at City Hall. That same weekend, the Eagles were undefeated. The Flyers, they had just started their season, but they were undefeated. The Sixers had lost a few, but they still had high, high hopes with, like, Joel Embiid and James Harden. The Phillies were about to go to the World Series for the first time since 2009. And the Union were en route to that MLS Cup final on that fated day. And I made sure that weekend to sit down and go, this is really good, I'm going to enjoy this. And it hasn't been that good since. And that is the plight of being a Philadelphia sports fan. We had those highs and took home nothing. Nothing to show for it.
I mean, to be fair, you did make Gareth Bale retire.
I can't believe you said that name in this house. We didn't make him do anything. If anything, he made the Union delete a tweet that was, Elliot is greater than Bale, because for a wonderful couple of moments, the Union were up 3-2 in stoppage time. The cup was in our hands, and Gareth Bale took it away. And I will never forgive him, that Welsh fuck. And then he almost did the same thing to the U.S. in the World Cup. Do you remember that shit? It's like a month later, he was lining up like a... Did he score in that game?
Mm-hmm.
I think he scored in that game. It was a 1-1 draw against Wales. But he was lining up a shot that was gonna go in, and everyone knew it. Turner was off his line, and I can't remember who. Somebody went in and just, like, fouled the shit out of him and took the yellow to prevent the shot and saved the game. But he almost burned me fucking twice. What a prick.
Very talented asshole. How dare... He has a personal vendetta against you.
Mm-hmm. Wales, golf, ruining Billy's day. I'm third. I'm still above Madrid.
Always above Madrid.
Such a niche joke.
That joke is for, like, two people.
That joke is for you and the twins. Like... speaking of last week, our episode on Ready Player One happened.
It sure did. So I actually have to issue a correction. Again, thanks to TikTok. So I mentioned that the port wine stain that Samantha has is a cop-out, and I still hold to the fact that it is a narrative cop-out because you could have chosen so many other options. However, I will say I did see a video from someone who has a port wine stain, and they explained that it is actually considered a lesion or a growth, I'm not sure which, and it is considered progressive, so it can spread across your face or body wherever it starts. And you do have to have surgeries to correct it. So I will say, I will admit that a port wine stain birthmark is more disabling than just being, you know, like a mole or a birthmark or whatever. Still fucking hate that book.
Yes. Thank you for issuing that correction. It was very, very brave of you, and you should be celebrated for getting something. I don't know where I'm going with this.
That was unnecessarily aggressive.
I know. I don't know where I was going with that. Last week we did talk about, on that episode, what robot and car and spaceship we'd have.
Mm-hmm.
And we should have put it forth to our audience to let us know what theirs are, but we didn't because we're not good at this.
We've only been doing it for a year. We're still babies.
Yes. Not even a year yet. But one of our listeners, good old Mark, did actually reach out and he was like, hey, do you want to know what mine are? And I was fucking, yes, absolutely. So, Mark, were he in the Oasis, his robot would be Megas XLR.
Excellent choice.
I don't know what that is.
I always forget that's an option. It used to come on, the reboot of it used to come on after Yu-Gi-Oh! On Saturdays.
So Mark also was telling me that he used to watch it on Cartoon Network, and it just, I never heard of it until last week.
Uh-huh. His, part of the Toonami block.
Of course it's Toonami. I could have told you that without knowing what it is. His spaceship of choice was the Aloha Oi from Space Dandy. Good pick, good
that,
pick.
That tracks with him as a person.
And his car is the Mach 5 from Speed Racer.
Tweebs. Both of you are tweebs.
In college, his car was called the Mach 5. And in fairness, mine was the Liger Zero, and that would have been my robot of choice. So, we're nerds. But that's enough about Ready Player One. Now that we are at our one-year anniversary, would you say that our podcast has come of age? Me neither. It absolutely has not. We're getting there. But now's as good a time as any to start our coming of age series. A little bit of Judy Blume.
All hail Queen Judy.
A little bit of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. So, Cody?
Yes.
I feel like our answers to this are going to be the same. Judy Blume was just ever present in our childhoods. You read a lot. My mom was a reading teacher. Judy Blume was around.
Actually, this is the first time I've finished a Judy Blume book.
I don't think I read any of her work either.
I read a couple of the Fudge books, and I never finished them because it was a little boy, and that wasn't my deal.
I forgot Fudge was her.
Yep.
I don't think I read those either, but I knew about them. It was all the stuff I knew about. Uh-huh. But I was always reading Lewis Sacker.
And yeah, that's
when I got a little bit older. David Lubar. They were my like authors of choice. I was never into the popular ones. I never really read a lot of Judy Blume. I never read a lot of R.L. Stine. Animorphs.
Yep.
Animorphs. I read Harry Potter when they were coming out.
You sure did.
Don't act
as
like you
did. As we all did.
But yeah, no, I never really touched on Judy Blume. And after watching this movie, I have a feeling that my mother may have read it and said, I'm going to keep this away from my children.
Uh-huh.
Because how dare they have personal opinions on religion? But since I feel like you and I both don't really have a history with this, we both were in sixth grade.
Yeah, we were.
You got any embarrassing sixth grade stories?
Oh, absolutely. Am I going to share them on the podcast?
Yes. No. You're going to share one. Oh, you got to share one. I'll share one.
I mean, it wasn't like... It
doesn't even have to be embarrassing.
I was not good at math. I'm better at math now, but as a child, it wasn't that I wasn't good at math. It was that math didn't come naturally to me, so I went, no. Because if I don't try, I can't fail. But my sixth grade math teacher went to high school with my brothers.
Awkward.
Yeah, so there was a point where I told him who my teacher was, and he said, oh, I was at the bar with her and her fiance this summer. So it was a weird thing to just know that my brother was running into my teacher at the bar on the weekends.
Awesome. That's great. For me, sixth grade was the year I decided I don't give a fuck about having a locker. Because when you're growing up and watching, like, Saved by the Bell and high school TV shows, you know, lockers are a big part of it. You talk to your friends at the locker before school. So the way that my middle school did things was each grade was split into two what they called teams. And each team had a wing in, like, the sixth grade wing of the middle school. So, like, this, the north end of the west wing was the gray team, and the south was the red team or whatever. You know what I mean?
I feel like that's, like,
and a then universal... all your classes were kind of in that hallway or adjacent, right?
Get you used to a bigger building and multiple teachers, but not freak you out and overwhelm you.
So, there was a third team for the gifted students.
Oh, honey.
And that's the team I was in. So my locker was on the southeast corner of the school, and I was late to my history class almost every day for about a month. Like, not like late, like a couple minutes, but I had lunch in the cafeteria 3 or 5 minutes, I don't remember, in middle school, to go to the opposite end of the building to my locker. And then back to the opposite end of the building and upstairs to my classroom, which was right above the cafeteria. And got yelled at for being late. And then just went, you know what? I'm taking everything out of my locker. It's never leaving my backpack. And I became that kid. And then every year, all the way through senior year of high school, when locker assignments would happen on the first day, I would decline. Didn't have to worry about it. Didn't have to think about it. I don't need one. Will carry my shit with me. So yeah. I mean, I could go more embarrassing. But I blocked out a lot of sixth grade because of the bullying. Anyway!
I mean, do you want an embarrassing story from sixth grade for me?
Not from you, but to those of you listening. If you have any awkward or embarrassing stories from your sixth grade year, send them to us at soonmajorpod@gmail.com, and we will happily air your dirty laundry on this podcast.
Please share, please.
We would love some. And if you don't send any, we'll make some up and attribute them to you. And you'll have to deal with the consequences. So somebody please send us something.
Just threaten our listeners.
I will tell stories from my childhood and put your name on it. You don't want that.
No, you really don't.
That is
don't.
Not something that anyone wants to have.
I've heard about his childhood. You don't want it.
So anyway, you read a book.
I did.
What book did you read?
I read Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret by Judy Blume.
And in a sentence or two, what was it about?
It was about a little girl named Margaret Ann, but she mostly goes by Margaret. Her family moves from New York City to the suburbs in Jersey, and it is about her experiencing a new public school for the first time and all the trials and tribulations that come with early puberty.
Wow. That sounds like a fun book. If only they turned it into a movie. Oh, wait! They did.
Hey!
Released in 2023. Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Let's watch a trailer.
God,
it's me, Margaret.
I'm here to speak to you today about your changing body.
The blood is released through the vagina.
Please, just do this one thing for me.
Let me just be normal and regular like everybody else. Just please, 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 please.
What I feel,
decided I want you to join my secret club. If you want to be in the club, then you have to wear a bra.
Oh. You think you need one?
Are you okay? You can tell me the truth.
Fine. Good. Yes.
We have the Campus Improvement Committee. Any volunteers?
Social Committee. Fundraising Committee.
And how are you?
I read that when you don't have any loved ones around, your life expectancy drops drastically. But, you know, I've had a good run.
It's tiring. Trying so hard all the time, doesn't it?
I don't know if I want to do this.
Just that we're ready. Please, God, let it be a lady.
Any of us will look like that when we're 19.
We must increase our bust.
In the last days of summer before her sixth grade year, Margaret and her family move from the Big Apple to New Jersey. Ugh. There she meets Nancy, a controlling yet nice girl who invites her into her secret club alongside Gretchen and Janie. Over the course of the year, the girls eagerly await puberty and all that it comes with. Prompted by her teacher, Mr. Benedict, Margaret also embarks in a year-long period of self-reflection, exploring her own religious ideals in the shadows of her Jewish father, his mother, and her Christian mother and her bigoted Christian parents. As Margaret learns about herself, her mother Barbara struggles to adjust to suburban life. In the end, Margaret learns to love herself, the weirdos in class, and that boy who mows the lawn. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. So, I don't know how long I'll be able to go without saying it. This movie's fucking amazing.
I haven't heard you react like that to a movie in a long time.
This movie hit me like a fucking truck.
You were cackling for like a solid 90 minutes.
Like that last bit of the trailer, it's kind of hard to tell what's happening because it's just the audio of it. But Janie and Margaret are buying sanitary pads for the first time. Sanitary napkins. Menstrual pads. Tampons.
Not tampons.
Not tampons. You're right. I don't know. I don't have a vagina.
That's a bit in the thing. Talks about. Never mind. Go ahead.
But anyway, I'll explain it. They're so nervous because it's a weird thing to do for the first time. You don't know how you're going to get judged when you're that age. And they peek around the corner and there's a nice old lady at the cash register. So they're like, fine, it's a lady. We're good. And as they start walking over, her cover comes in and it's this guy named Todd or something. And he takes over. And they put the pads down on the conveyor belt. And it's only like 3 feet long. He can reach out and grab them. But no, he flips the switch and the conveyor slowly moves them towards the register. It takes forever. And in a panic, Margaret throws a box of Tic Tacs onto the pads. As if they came in here for those too. I was dying. And then outside of it, Janie is like, what's up with the Tic Tacs? And she's like, I panicked! And it's so fucking funny.
In the book, she buys a comb.
Oh, God. But, like, something about, and from my research, and I think from what we've talked about off mic, the film is very, very closely adapted to the movie. Or yes. to the book.
Yes. The plots involving her mother are pretty significantly added.
Mm. And I know there's some bits and bobs cut.
And there's a lot of stuff that's like, not a lot, but there's some major things that are switched, but they all still happen.
Yeah, like I know that they cut a lot of scenes in the classroom. So you don't really see a lot of the other kids outside of the main foursome.
Which, like, when you're that old, is that not, like, what? Even when you're in school, you're not really thinking about school, you're thinking about your friends.
Yeah, yeah, you've got your cliques and everything. And that's something that I feel this movie did so well, was just capture what that age is like. Just perfectly. Every scene, I either laughed because I knew kids like that, or cringed because I was that kid. Every scene of this movie.
when I finished the book, or actually when I started the book, I remember coming home and telling you, I am just as uncomfortable as when I read Ready Player One for exactly the opposite reason.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I honestly can't tell because I know you and I know you don't like cringe comedy and secondhand embarrassment, so I'm not sure if you would love or hate this movie.
Probably both.
Because there's a lot, like, I don't have the same owning a penis. There are some aspects of this movie that did not occur to me when I was 11. I didn't have my first period until well into my 20s. So, like, that kind of thing I can't relate to, but, like, the sex ed class, like, that awkward video, and I still remember, it wasn't the you're getting old going through puberty talk, it was a little bit later, it was the miracle of life. In high school, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the video of the live birth. And there was that one shithead in class. We had, of course, that day we had to have a substitute. And this one shithead, like, made her fast forward because he's like, I want to see the pussy. And she was just, like, over it. She's like, okay, I'm going to fast forward to the birth. And, like, that kind of weird shit, like, just really, like, that same energy is all over this movie.
So... being an adult woman, and just, she's so desperate through this whole movie, through this whole book, she wants boobs, she's praying to God to give her boobs, and she wants to get her period so bad. And me, in the future, as a woman who has had her period for, you know, going on 24 years, yeah, do that math.
No.
I'm just like, honey, no. Honey, you don't want it. Once it comes, it doesn't go away.
With the exception of the height, you're that one girl in class.
I was literally Laura Danker. I was, like, thank God at least some of the other girls in my high school had, or some of the other girls in my sixth grade class had boobs, but by far, like, I was a C cup in sixth grade. That's not something that you want to be.
something I find fascinating, this just came to me, the secret club, which I don't recall having a name in the movie.
They were the preteen sensations in the book.
I'm so glad they removed that from the movie, because that's terrible.
They come to it after, like, a good hour of trying to come up with a name. It's delightful. And they refer to each other, they also have special names that they're supposed to use. For each other.
So many rules.
Margaret is Mavis.
It's just, my point though, Mavis. Oh God, the 70s. They are, the four of them are so obsessed with, oh, I want to have boobs and I want to have my period. And none of them talk to Laura Danker. They all ridicule her because essentially sixth grade slut shaming.
Yeah, because they're jealous.
And... It's so, yeah, that makes sense, actually.
It's the jealousy and the insecurity, because, and it's also because, oh, she goes behind the A and P with the boys. And it's like, by the time that finally comes up in conversation with Laura, when Margaret is grumpy and just starts shouting these accusations at her, we already know that Nancy is not the best source of information, but... here, like, Margaret having the self-awareness to realize as soon as she says those things, she's like, wait, Nancy is the one who told me that. Why should I believe what Nancy's telling me? And especially finding out, like, Laura is, like, a devout Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get from Laura's perspective, her being, like, basically being like, I don't control this. Why are you guys so angry at me and so mean to me for the way that I look?
Mm. I think it's just, I didn't have, so my childhood wasn't quite like that as far as like friend groups go. It wasn't that I didn't have friends at that age. I did. You just refuse to believe he exists.
He doesn't exist.
But.
That just is going to sound like I'm bullying you.
And actually, like, I don't think I knew him in sixth grade yet. I don't think we met till later.
Yeah, convenient.
I'm not going to name him because he is real and I don't want to blow up his spot.
He's not real, but I appreciate your commitment to the bit.
Fuck you.
For the record, I'm not saying that he has only imaginary friends. I'm just saying this specific one is imaginary.
But the point I'm making is I never kept the idea of growing up just amongst myself and my friends. Because I had an older sister who was 2 years older. Mm-hmm. And she and I would talk about things like if, you know, my body is changing, like, we'd, you know, talk about it. And I was okay talking to my parents about some of those things. And part of that has to do with, like, the other half of this movie, the... Because there's, like, the physical puberty and a spiritual puberty happening in this movie, like, simultaneously.
Yeah.
And I was at a point in my life then where I thought my spiritual puberty was done. When in reality, I didn't have it until, fucking like, the last what? 6 years.
Oh, God. To be in sixth grade again and just have that absolute certainty of how everything is going to go.
I know. Like, I haven't kept it secret that my father was a pastor, was, in the past tense. he knows what he did. So, like, at that age, I was at church 3 times a week. Sometimes 4 if, like, there was children's choir happening around Christmas or Easter. It was, most of my social circles were people I knew in church. And while I was in public school and got the public school sex ed education... I also got the Christian Sunday school sex ed education. So, yeah. A little bit different.
Meanwhile, I also had older siblings. I had, but they were much older. My sister is 10 and a half years older. My two older brothers are even older than that. So, I was, it was kind of hard for my mom to be like, so don't have sex till you get married.
Because she was on her second husband?
Yes, she was on her second husband. My dad adopted the older 3. But also, like, I had my first nephew when I was 8 years old. So I got the birds and the bees talk real early. So there was always kind of like, I knew... I had a very specific education on the subject, so I didn't have that kind of, like, naivete or innocence that Margaret has, and it's... But I also remember, even though I did have that, like, level of education, I still remember being 11 and being like, oh, what would it be like to kiss a boy?
Yeah, like... I don't remember going as far as practicing kissing, like you see in the movie, like on
the pillows.
But I looked forward to my first kiss with a girl. Took a while. I definitely prayed to God to make me be normal.
Oh.
Yeah, which that happened in the trailer. You heard that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that hit real close to home with me. I feel like we're going to spend more time tonight talking about, like, our own upbringings instead of the movie itself or the book. But that's kind of what Judy Blume did super well with the writing, is make it so relatable.
Judy Blume is excellent at dealing with topics that you don't think are... Like, how do you break down an interfaith marriage and the abandonment or disownment of a child in a way that your child understands it?
Yeah.
And Judy Blume is a master at kind of putting everything into a child's perspective so that as an adult or as the older person reading it, you can see around the edges. Like, her mom is obviously profoundly sad at the loss of her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And her, even though they love each other, it's still really tough. And then you also can see, like, as much as they appreciate what Grandma Sylvia does, you can also see that wearing on after a while. Because, I mean, you've got stereotypical Jewish grandmother who is affectionate but also there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who, you know, moved 3,000 miles away from my family to escape them.
I can't relate.
No.
In the book, does Margaret have friends in New York, or is it really just her parents and grandmother?
So she does, but she kind of drops them, because she gets a letter when she gets that invitation. She's like, oh yeah, I haven't even sent anything to my friends in New York to say that what our new address is, so it couldn't be from them. So it's just kind of that, like, out of sight, out of mind thing when you're, you know, 11.
Yeah. Can relate, actually, because we moved about a half hour in Pennsylvania terms when I was 8 years old. And it was over the summer, so it was fourth grade, new school, new everybody. The thing is, like, I was weirdly prepared for that because my mom was a reading teacher in my old school district. So, and we were working on that house for years before we actually moved. So I was in the same elementary school for kindergarten and first grade. And then they built a new school building that my mom was working in. And we thought that was going to be our last year in the district. So I moved to that building and she would just take me in every day and take me home, so I didn't have to worry about buses. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up staying there another year, so I went to a different building for third grade. So by the time fourth grade happened, I'm like, I'm already used to meeting new people. I have my one friend from the neighborhood who lived four houses down that, like, I kept in touch with through high school. But, like, beyond that, I didn't really see anybody I went to school with until way later. Like, one girl from, like, second grade that I had a crush on.
Of course you did.
Like, came out of the woodwork a few years back, like, just before I moved to L.A., like, started going to my home church and everything, like, wild. But, like, I knew you at that point, so it was whatever.
I won.
You did.
Yeah, I never moved. I was in the same house my entire childhood. I went to the same school district. And, like, yes, I moved schools in that I moved from elementary to middle to high school. But, like, my middle school and high school were attached.
Yeah. Mine were, like, on the same property, just two different buildings.
Yeah. And then, like, my best friend, she moved from a private Christian school to my middle school in seventh grade. And that was when we met. And that was, like, I think that's what drew me to her, was because, like, I already kind of had a reputation for being a weird kid. Shocking, I know.
You? No, not now. Never.
But, like, her whole upbringing in life was so different from mine that I was just like, I mean, I don't like making this comparison because I think she's a little shit, but I also understand it. But, like, I was the Nancy Wheeler in that situation.
Yeah. That's, I mean, and there's nothing, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. When you're 11, like, yeah, sometimes you're going to do and say some shitty things because you're a child and haven't learned the consequences of your actions. It was my
first time being a kid.
Yeah. Like I alluded earlier that I was bullied in middle school, and I was. I thought I was better than everybody because I went to church and that made me feel like I was better because I knew something that these heathen kids didn't in public school.
You've got that evangelical exceptionalism going on.
I did. And I would carry a Bible around in the middle. Yeah. I was the kid who had his Bible on him all the time.
That was my bestie too. She carried a Bible.
Yeah. So, like, I still cringe thinking about that, but also, like, I also played the victim. Like, I'm being bullied because of my faith, because evangelical Christians love being fucking martyrs.
The fucking point of evangelical Christianity.
And it didn't click with me till adulthood that I would say and do things that I'm sure other kids misconstrued as I was bullying them. And I thought I was doing them out of, like, self-defense and self-preservation. And it's just part of growing up. So, like, I don't see Nancy as a villain here. I think that little shit kid is a villain.
Oh,
the cute one?
Oh, yeah. Jacob Roy?
Ah, what's his fucking name? The one they all have a crush on.
Philip Leroy.
Philip Leroy.
Yes.
I think he's probably a villain.
Because
he did not ask for consent when he kissed her. I didn't hear one word, and she did not, like, lean into it. She just stood there and took it.
So, I wouldn't necessarily say he's a villain, because I don't think anyone here is a villain except her fucking grandparents.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, it's the same thing where he's just a little menace. And he's just kind of a little shithead, and it's because he's 11, and, like, he's definitely the kid that grows up to be a football player and skates by on his looks.
That dude peaked in high school.
Oh, absolutely.
He works, he acquired his dad's car dealership in town. He still lives in New Jersey. He graduated from, let's say, Rutgers with a C average.
Went there on a football scholarship, dropped it after 2 years.
No, he went there because he thought he could just walk on because he didn't want to play scholarship football at a smaller school.
Oh, God, you're right. But, like, I don't think any of the children are villains here.
No, the adults are, for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing with, like, I lost my point. It had to do with Nancy.
Her being kind of, like, overbearing and...
Like, Nancy definitely is the kind of person that grew up to be a PTA mom. Like, she, depending on how the rest of her childhood goes...
It's funny you mention that, because I don't think this is the stuff that's in... I think this is the stuff original to the movie, is the PTA stuff.
Yes, it is.
So, her mom is the head of the PTA.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really like this, and I want to talk about this more in depth. They fleshed out Barbara, her mom.
Yeah.
A lot in the movie beyond what they did in the book.
To clarify, you mean
Margaret's mom, Barbara.
Okay.
And when they were living in New York, she taught art classes during the day. But she's not doing that in New Jersey. She's a homemaker. And now it's this relatively liberal New York woman trying to make it as a suburban stay-at-home mom. She needs to learn how to cook. What she ends up doing is joining the PTA. And then she gets kind of walked on by Nancy's mom.
One of the things that I noticed, because we were finishing dinner as you were finishing the movie, so you had headphones on so I couldn't hear it, but I saw that, like, the women of New Jersey were very, like, 60s styled, whereas Rachel McAdams was styled very much, like, 70s.
That was 100% a choice.
Yeah.
I didn't get any, like, real research from the costume makeup department on that, but it is, you're not the only person to notice that.
Yeah.
But can I say, Rachel McAdams is fucking inspired casting.
She's fucking brilliant.
Like, not only is she a killer actor, she nails this role. Like, she's the mom I wish I had. Sorry, mom. That was so mean. I would have been okay with it if she were my mom. But also, like, when there's the secret club and Margaret's the new girl in town and they have the boy book, how can I not think of Mean Girls? And there's the mean girl from Mean Girl, but she's the nice mom. Like, it's such an interesting casting choice, and I loved her in this movie.
So,
but yeah, good shout on the 60s, 70s thing.
What do you think their socioeconomic status is?
Margaret's family?
Yeah.
Middle class. But, like, 70s middle class, when that still meant you could buy a house on one salary.
Because I'm thinking, like, it's... The way that Margaret describes her mom when she's talking to Nancy's mom for the first time, when she's talking to Mrs. Wheeler, is she's, like... She won't be interested in doing the PTA or anything like that. She paints. And Nancy's mom is, like... She paints? And Margaret clarifies, oh, she paints, like, pictures and still lifes and stuff. And I feel like this is a joke. I might be reading into it. But Nancy's mom is like, oh, I thought you meant she paints, like, walls or something. I was like, oh, she definitely thought her child made a lesbian made friend with a lesbian child.
Oh, no, I would have read that as lower class.
Oh, that's also possible.
Like, low class. Because when we first meet Nancy in the movie, I don't know if this is in the book, she's like, come over, we'll run in the sprinklers. My house is the bigger house up the street. She doesn't say big, she's bigger. Like, there's that already that status play. And that's, like, kind of what Nancy's character is the higher status to the lower status. And that's something interesting the movie did, is we talked about this yesterday. You believe all the characters in the book are white, correct? Or is it not specified?
It's not specified to the best of my knowledge, which we were talking about it, and it's like... It doesn't really matter, because I don't necessarily think... Margaret grew up in New York.
Yeah.
She was granted, she grew up on the West Side. like the Upper West Side. So she wasn't necessarily surrounded by... She probably was primarily surrounded by white people, but she wouldn't bat an eye at seeing a Hispanic person or a black person. So I don't think it necessarily matters.
Okay. Because I was just curious if it was even mentioned in the book, because they cast a very diverse cast. And to its credit, before all you anti-woke mob get all up in arms about them blackening up, woking up your Judy Blume, New Jersey is one of the most diverse places in this country. Listen to any episode of Chris Gethard's New Jersey is the World, and he will be happy to tell you how diverse New Jersey is.
That man loves his own.
He loves some fucking New Jersey. So, the Secret Society of Preteen Superheroes, what's it called?
The Preteen Sensation.
Yeah, them. Nancy is, you know, I would say upper middle class white. Margaret's going to be middle class, half Jewish, half white, not quite sure what she wants to do. Janie is black, and Gretchen is Jewish. And it's an interesting power thing, too, that, like, the one in charge, the leader of the group is Nancy, and she's the white person.
I feel like it's also interesting having another... So, two things are interesting about that to me, because... Janie is clearly the front runner to be Margaret's best friend in the book because, like, they share the same, they're closest in height. So, like, in gym class and stuff, they're always paired together. And they're together in ways that, like, Nancy isn't always. And then you've also got Gretchen, who I think Gretchen is explicitly Christian in the book. Because she goes to church with her. She goes to church with one of the friends, but I don't remember which one it is.
In the movie, she goes to church on Christmas Eve with Nancy. And it's a, like...
That's her second one.
Yeah, that's the second one in the movie as well.
Okay.
Because the first one's with Janie, and it's a black church.
Oh.
And it's such a great choice. They did two things with Janie that were just... Casting a black girl in that role opened some doors for the storytelling. And that's one of them. And she's... enjoying it more than she enjoyed Temple. She already went to Temple with Sylvia at this point.
Does she go on Rosh Hashanah?
It doesn't specify. I don't think so.
Okay, she goes on Rosh Hashanah, which is specific.
Yeah.
Because she goes on a holy day.
It's not specified if it's a holy day, but she goes to Temple first. And then she goes to church with Janie. And she's doing the whole clapping and enjoying it. And she's like, I don't know if I like this any more than Temple, but I'm having more fun. And then, you know, white people church with Nancy later. And the other great thing they did with Janie is before Martin Prince's birthday. What was that character's name? Because he reminded me so much of Martin Prince from The Simpsons.
Norman Feldstein.
Norman. When they're getting ready for his birthday, they're showing the four girls get ready.
Uh-huh.
And Janie is straightening her hair.
Oh.
So her mom's got her over the sink. She's heating the metal comb and she's doing the whole routine. And I was like, that's such a lovely touch where you're not just casting a person of color to cast a person of color. You're doing it because you're able to expand on the story. And now a young person of color in 2023, 2024 can see that and go, okay, my experience isn't unique because her experience is like my experience. Even if she's not the main character, she's there. And it's still like that, what you want with representation, right?
Yeah.
And I really, really appreciated that moment.
Going back to Nancy, she absolutely became Angelica's mom from Rugrats. I'm not fucking wrong.
You're so right.
She became... Not Cynthia. Cynthia's the doll. Fuck, what is her name?
I don't remember.
I don't remember her name either. But she absolutely became just the high-powered 80s executive.
Do you think she and Philip Leroy ever hooked up?
Oh, God.
Like, they absolutely did it in the back of, like, an 84 Camry after, like, Homecoming.
You know, I don't think they did. I think she was done with Philip Leroy by the end of this year. Because he's such a little shit. He's such a little prick.
He's like shooting spitballs on the ceiling at the party. And they're all like, oh, he's so dreamy. And Harry's like, he's a little puke.
I do love that the 14-year-old boys, like Nancy's older brother and Moses Freed, is that his name?
Moose.
I like how she... I'm going to embarrass you,
it's
by the
Evan
way.
Evan and Moose, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to embarrass you a little bit here. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I like how one of the things that she describes is she's like, I like his hair and I like the way he smiles and says his name. And I also like how one of his front teeth is a little bit twisted. And when we first met, you had not done Invisalign yet. And that was one of my favorite things, was that you had a really cute smile, and also one of your front teeth was a little not straight, and I thought it was really charming and cute.
Well, give it a couple years, because my retainer broke, it's going to move back into place.
You could just go to the dentist and get a new one.
Do I look like I have dentist money?
Subscribe to our Patreon. We don't have a Patreon.
Go fund me to get Billy to a dentist. You're bringing up the older brothers. That is something that I also, like, super related to in this. Was a few moments during the movie, the girls are having fun, and then out of nowhere, the older sibling...
Older brother with a steel chair!
Older sibling just breaks into the quote, safe space that they're in, and just mocks them all incessantly. And my sister, when her friends would over, would do that to me all the fucking time. She loved... If I had friends over, she would love just making fun of us and just coming in and just mocking whatever we were doing and making us feel small. And I understand as an adult, that's just what kids do. I did the same to her. But like, ooh, man, at the time, that fucking sucked.
Despite having older siblings, they were all out of the house by the time I had friends that were coming over.
My sister's 2 years older, not 20, so... So yeah, like...
I got the benefit of having siblings and being an only child.
And also absolutely had crushes on my sister's friends. Can relate.
So...
Oh no.
When I was in sixth grade, there was a new girl that had just moved...
From New York to your high school in New Jersey.
Onto my bus route. And she was French-Canadian, I think.
Ooh la la.
It was... The important thing was that her whole family spoke French in addition to English. And that was my, like, first experience with someone who was bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was obsessed with her. In the way that, like... Only young girls that don't quite know they're gay yet can be obsessed with each other. But she moved away at the end of that year. She actually moved to where we went to college to.
Oh, hey. How about that?
But she had an older brother who was 2 years older. And I panicked once when someone was like, oh, who do you have a crush on? And I just said her older brother. And she mocked me incessantly for years. It was 1 year. She was only there for a year, but she mocked me for weeks.
Do you remember when we went to, and I'm not going to name names, when we went to my friend's wedding and a high school friend I hadn't seen in ages came to pick up another one of our friends?
Yes.
He confided in me. No. That wasn't him. Never mind. Haha. So anyway,
was this your male friend or was this
male
the
friend.
Female friend?
But okay. I'm thinking of a different person.
Oh, okay.
I actually can't remember who it was. It was one of two guys. I had a buddy in study hall sophomore year. So it was my sister's senior year, and he confided in me that he was like, I would. This is high school. So it's not like crushes. It was just like, yeah, your sister's kind of hot. And I'm like, no. Ew! What's wrong with you?
No disrespect to your sister. Ew!
No thank you. So I've been on that side of it, and it's weird.
I was staying over at her... And I never stayed over at her house, but there was a point where, like, he was waking up from a nap, and I was walking into her room, which was upstairs, and he didn't have a shirt on, and I was like... Fascinated in the way that you are when you haven't been around people your own age, So I was, like, looking, and and then he, like, came over and closed the door, and I realized I had just been, like, staring at him like a tiny little vampire.
You still do that to me when I come out of the shower.
Yes.
So, we could tell stories of our childhood all night if we wanted to.
Yes.
We absolutely could. Let's talk about the movie itself a little bit, the adaptation.
Wasn't there something else you wanted to talk about with regards to...
Oh, the B-plots involving adults. Barbara. Yes. So, I want to know your thoughts on... Is there... So, I guess what I'm saying is they fleshed out the movie a little bit. They expanded on Barbara's character and what the adult in Margaret's life is doing alongside her coming of age, right?
Yeah.
Now, my question for you is... Especially since that was more for the movie than in the book. Do you think that was just there so adult viewers watching with their kids had something to empathize with? Or do you think there's something to gain for a kid seeing that?
I absolutely think there's something to gain for a kid seeing that. Because, like I was saying earlier, with something that Judy Blume does really well is giving that perspective from a child's point of view, and you see like the edges of all the adult problems that are swirling just kind of over the kid's head. Like, they know they're there, but they can't quite put their finger on them. And I feel like that's also how she handles adults, like the kids seeing adults. Because when you're a kid, your parents are just your parents. They're not people. And I feel like puberty, right about that time frame, is when you start realizing, oh shit, they're actually people too. And you get that in book when Margaret is bitterly disappointed because now she's not going to get to spend time with Grandma Sylvia in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, her and her dad are both angry with her mom. And finally her mom kind of like breaks down and is just like, this is important to me. Like, there will be other times for you to go to Florida, but like I'm trying to do my best. And both Margaret and her dad kind of also break down at the same time and are like, this is really important to mom and we want it to go well for her. And so there's absolutely value in seeing, as a kid, seeing adults as people too.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you always have the stories. The thing you always hear as an adult is, like, remember what it was like to be a kid. But I think as a kid, you also have to remember, hey, the adults around you are also, they were kids too. They're still people the same way you are.
Yeah. And when I was watching it, I had this thought because, I mean, I still remember being a kid. Not every detail, but I remember some of the rough times, you know, like the growing up of growing up. And I remember confiding in my father some things, and he was doing the right thing and telling me, like, hey, yeah, I get it. I was a kid once too, and this is what I went through, and everything, you know, everything turns out, and you just gotta muscle through it, you know, like normal parent shit. But it was so hard to see that because my parents always, in front of the kids, like, put on an air of everything's okay. I never saw whatever troubles they were going through at the time. I just saw, you know, mom's doing her best as mom, dad's doing his best as dad. And the only time I ever saw them, like, you know, break their character, so to speak, is if, like, somebody died or something. So I love that in this movie, there is an adult who's also trying to fit in. She joins the PTA and then realizes, oh, this lady's kind of taking advantage of me here with, because the task is they need to cut 10,000 felt stars because they're repainting the gym and they're going to do the night sky in the gym. And she finishes her stars and Nancy's mom comes and picks them up and says, oh, Debbie down the street, her stars are a little lopsided. Can you do hers too? And she's like, yeah, sure. And then in the end, they don't even hang them because it's a fire hazard. And then at the end of the school year, Nancy's mom approaches her again after she's teaching art classes now, Barbara. She's kind of found her footing in their town. And she approaches her after an art class and is like, hey, I've got some great committees for you for next year. And how does she word it? She's like, I'd love to, but I don't want to. And then she just leaves. And it's such a great little arc. And this is a rare case where I brought this to you last night to think about.
Yeah.
In my research today, I actually found a quote from the director about fleshing out Barbara. And it's not nearly as in-depth as I thought it was going to be. Quote, I am always cognizant of shifting POV in a film, where you can do it, and how to do it in a way that threads through and isn't distracting from the story. But when I reread the book as an adult, I was really struck by Barbara. Whereas when I read it by a kid, I was oblivious to the parents. I was oblivious to anything that didn't have to do with the kids. But there were a few little seeds in there that made me think Barbara was an interesting character, and I wanted to see what would happen if we dug deeper into her and gave her her own journey. And I'm a mom who struggled with balancing my role with my career and how much time I devote to my career. So I wanted to explore that. A lot of the maternal guilt I feel, you know, because I do work so much, I wanted to explore all that in Barb's character. The seeds were there in the book, so I was able to plant them to see what would grow. And I love that. End quote, sorry. The end I love that was me, not part of the quote.
One of the, I think the scene, so I'm going to quote the lead singer of Cake here.
Yes, you are.
He's talking about, I saw an interview with him where he was talking about the first time he heard I Will Survive and why he decided to cover it as an adult. And he's like, you know how as a kid you're like kind of a little sociopath? To an extent, kids are kind of little sociopaths, and it's that, like, self-awareness bumping into other self-awarenesses that builds you. And I think the scene where you really get that self-awareness kind of blossoming and also hitting boundaries of other adults is the dinner scene with the Christian grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know this is different in the movie,
mm-hmm.
but in the book, it is just the Hutchins. It's just Barbara's parents. Sylvia doesn't show up until after they already leave. And as someone who was around a lot of evangelical families and parents, this whole scene felt so accurate to that just indescribable uncomfort, discomfort, tension that just exists at all times. And you get in the story, Margaret actually says that both she and her dad kind of ask her mom, why are you so why are you trying so hard? Why are you pushing so hard for everything to be perfect? And she's like, I need them to know that I don't need them and that I'm doing fine without them. Like, she, I think in the movie, she actually cooks the dinner and everything.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, she hires someone to help. So they have a maid come in and clean the house. She has, hired help come in and do the cooking for the day to make it look not necessarily look like they're more affluent than they are, but more like, oh, we can just afford to do this. And the scene where Margaret breaks down and basically shrieks at her grandparents, you don't really hear her mom and dad in the background. But after she leaves and throws herself in her bedroom, she can hear the argument continuing, and it's it's Barbara basically dressing down her parents, and her dad also kind of being like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?"
So to be clear, because it is different in the movie, what do her grandparents say and do at that dinner? Are they trying to convert her?
So basically they find out that she has gone to church, and they're basically like, haha, we told you she was a Christian the whole time. Like, you were born a Christian, you will always stay a Christian. And Margaret, that's the point.
Oh, that's so fucking real.
And that's where Margaret is like, I don't need God. I don't want your God. And she leaves. And that's also the point in the book where she stops praying for a little while.
So where it's different in the movie is Sylvia, with her new boyfriend, flies up from Florida and crashes the party.
Oh, is it boyfriend? They're not married?
it's never specified if they are or aren't.
Okay.
But her new man's, Binnaman rhymes with cinnamon.
Yes, Mr. Binnaman.
They just show up and crash the dinner party. So it's the seven of them. And it's tense at first because Sylvia will pour some wine and then she l'chaims the evangelical grandparents and they are not having it.
I love that so much.
Where the only thing that could have made it more awkward is if the parents were Baptist and didn't even drink the wine. But they do drink the wine. Which, I was in a teetotaler house. That was not happening. But then the fight happens because Barbara's parents ask, have you been to Sunday school yet? And before Margaret can even answer, because she has, Sylvia goes, no, she went to temple with me. She's Jewish. And that's where it starts.
So it's all between the adults.
It's between the adults. And then Margaret has her blow up and is like, I don't even know if I believe in a God. And storms off. But before she does that, even Barbara steps in and is like, no, Margaret isn't anything. She's nothing until she's older. And even though she's trying to protect Margaret there, she's still making decisions for Margaret there, which is what sets off Margaret. And I thought that was such a great scene. What a great guess who's coming to dinner.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to look for the actual thing that... okay, so the fight starts... A person doesn't choose religion. A person is born to it. So Margaret is Christian. And Barbara's like, please, Margaret could just as easily be Jewish. Don't you see, if you keep this up, you're going to spoil everything. I don't mean to upset you, dear, but a child is always the religion of the mother, and you, Barbara, were born Christian. You were baptized. It's that simple. Margaret is nothing, my father stormed, and I'll thank you for ending this discussion right now. I didn't want to listen anymore. How could they talk that way in front of me? Didn't they know I was a real person with feelings of my own? Margaret, grandmother said, touching my sleeve, it's not too late for you, dear. You're still God's child. Maybe while I'm visiting, I could take you to church and talk to the minister. He might be able to straighten things out.
I am so glad that I mentioned earlier I've been going through my own spiritual puberty like the last like 6 years. Because I grew up in a Christian house, I'm so glad I'm doing it 3,000 miles away from my mom. Because she's tried to take me to her new church.
Her new cult.
And I am not... No, because... no. I don't need to sit there and listen to a pastor who thinks being queer is a mental illness.
Which I'm sure he doesn't think mental illnesses are real either.
No, probably not. Everything's a mental illness. That way you don't have to blame, you know, anything on real problems. But I digress. Yeah, the religion stuff in this was real, like, hit me real hard, especially now.
It's really interesting diving into this book after The Color Purple.
Yeah, I had that same thought with the, like, because the first line of The Color Purple is, Dear God.
Yeah.
And this is, Are You There, God? Like, yeah. I almost wish we didn't do Ready Player One at all and just did this. Yeah. That would have been such a smooth segue, man.
Yeah, it's... So, is there, like, a... This book was published in 1970. Is there, like, a weird thing about her teacher being a guy? And, like, everyone being a little shocked that it's a guy?
It's not that he's a guy. It's that he's black.
Huh.
And it's not like... It's subtle. There's not like any spoken dialogue. There's not a lot of school in the
yeah.
in the movie. Just where it's required. So you get like the little project. I think they're studying Belgium or something.
Yes.
And that's why she has to interact with not her crew.
Yes.
And beyond that, it's all just like after school and weekends, basically. But there is kind of a reaction when Mr. Benedict walks in, because it's his first year as his teacher, and he's a black man. But also, like, it's New Jersey.
Yeah, they're, the shock for them is that he's a guy.
Yeah.
At all. And, again, I don't think his skin tone is described. He could be black. But they have a whole deal where it's like when his first assignment for them is, what do you think of having a male teacher? And it's one of those examples of like how times change. Because, like, so there was actually a major edit to the publication, or to the book, after it was already published.
Okay.
You know where she's talking about having practiced with the pad, and, like, they buy the sanitary pads and everything?
Yeah.
Originally, they bought belted sanitary napkins. Because adhesive pads weren't invented and popularized until 1969. So the book was edited after the fact to update it to adhesive pads instead of the belted napkins.
They didn't exactly show her practicing. So I don't know what the pads were.
What she buys is basically what I buy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like a major change. So I actually read the updated version of it with the adhesive pads.
Yeah. It's... I keep forgetting that this took place in 1970. You know, we brought this up last time. And you and I have a saying where the only period piece is one made about the period it's made in.
Yep.
Somehow, this movie was made in 2023, set in the 70s, reminded me of the 90s and early 2000s, and feels timeless.
I think it's because...
And it's because it's based in just human emotion.
And, like, modern childhood kind of hasn't changed since the 50s?
Like, the only thing that would be different in modern times is that some of the conversations with Nancy and Margaret would be over text.
Yeah, or you'd be playing video games.
Yeah, like, the secret club would be, I don't know, watching, like, they would be doing... They would have a TikTok. Like, they would have a TikTok with, like, four followers.
They'd be filming TikTok dances.
Like, that's... Yeah. But somehow they managed to make it, like, not feel dated. And not feel... Like, feel of an era, but not unique to the era.
Yeah.
It walked that tightrope so, so wonderfully.
It's the magic of Judy Blume.
Yeah. It's that understanding of what kids are like.
Yeah, and it's exactly how I felt reading the book, is, oh god, I have been every child that she's talking about, even though this is, you know, in the 70s.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is about an 11-year-old girl, and I related to things she was going through. Like, I related, as a 30-something-year-old man, I related to things she's going through, because it never ends. We never stop growing up. We always have that desire to fit in and to be, quote, normal. Whether or not that's a real achievable thing that is possible.
Yes.
So
since I interrupted you earlier, let's talk about,
like,
the movie.
45 minutes ago.
I know.
Written and directed by Kelly Freeman Craig, who was Edge of 17.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes me want to go back and see that now, because I missed it when it came out.
I also want to see 8th Grade.
Yeah, the Bo Burnham one.
Yeah.
That would be a fun double feature we should do sometime if we really want to just cringe at youth.
I feel like fun isn't the correct adjective for Bo Burnham's, but...
Yeah. But yeah, I heard so much good about Edge of 17 when it came out, and that this is her, like... I think this is the next one that she both wrote and directed. I know she had other projects as well. But what a great eye. What a great viewpoint. Nailed it. Margaret was played by Abby Ryder Forston, who played Cassie Lang in some of the Ant-Man movies.
Okay.
So she's been around. She's also a fucking killer.
Yeah, what did you say to me last night?
So on the top three build are Abby Ryder Forston, Rachel McAdams, and Kathy Bates. Rachel McAdams has Academy Award nominee over her name, and Kathy Bates has Academy Award winner over her name. In like 20 years, all three of them will have won Oscars. Like, this girl... She's got it. She's fantastic in this role. And I pray to God she doesn't fall into any of the old child actor traps. I want her to leave public eye for a while and then come back as a fully grown adult with just a perfect skill set and just take over Hollywood, because she's a killer. She's so good.
I mean, she's got that Marvel money.
Well, she wasn't in the Avengers. She was only... They replaced her eventually. But
still,
I mean, she nailed it in this. Like we said before, her mom, Barbara, is played by Rachel McAdams. The Notebook, Mean Girls. She is a wonderful casting choice. So just why, like, she's one of those actresses that I've, like, she came onto the scene when I started really paying attention to movies, so I kind of feel like I've watched her grow as an actor as well, and God, she's matured into a fucking queen. She's great. Sylvia is played by Kathy Bates, you know.
Speaking of queens.
Speaking of queens. Misery, Fried Green Tomatoes. Not much more to say about her as Kathy fucking Bates.
She's going to be a friend of the pod.
Yeah, I mean, I made a point to grab, like, titles that we'll end up covering eventually here. Herb, her dad, is played by Benny Safdie. You know? The writer and director of fucking Uncut Gems.
I walk, again, like I said earlier, I couldn't hear, I could only see, and I walked in, and I was like, this is so good, it feels anti-Semitic.
He's amazing! His portrayal is so fucking good, because he's got perfect dad energy. And just, like, his chemistry with Rachel McAdams is, like every kid wants their parents to be. Like, not like picture perfect, but weirdly charming and perfect. Like, there's issues there, but it's not between them. It's just how they each handle different things. Like, how they handle her mom and dad coming in, you know? Like, they each handle it differently. But they're still, like, a perfect partnership. It's great. Nancy was played by Elle Graham, who was Sarah Hopper in Stranger Things.
Okay.
She's also pretty... shut the fuck up, Siri. She's also great. She is, you know, not the easiest role to play for a kid. But she plays it well. And the only other actor I grabbed was Mr. Benedict, who's played by Echo Kellum. He did a lot of TV. Nothing, like, major, but I thought he was great, too. Like, I just wanted to point out this actor, because he should be a bigger name than he is. Didn't have, a big role in the movie, but crushed it. Yeah, I can't Where Are They Now, These Kids, because Where Are They Now is still on set. This is a new movie. I'd love to revisit this in a while, though, and see what happened to them.
Yeah.
Because this movie holds up.
Hopefully none of them turn out to be Tories.
Secret Tories.
So, did you have any other, trivia or...
I couldn't find much of anything, honestly.
So... I did do a smidge of research on the book, just because this book is, like, famous for being banned and being challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So just for funsies, I did check the lists. So the American Library Association puts out a list every decade of the most frequently challenged books in that decade. I could only find the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. So, in the 1990s, do you want to guess where it fell on the most frequently challenged books?
In the 90s? Probably pretty low. I don't feel like it was challenged a lot.
It was both lower and higher than I expected. It was 60th on the list
of 100.
In the 2000s.
I feel like the 2000s would be even lower.
It was. It was 99th on the list.
Damn.
And in the 2010s, it completely fell off the list. It was not on the top 100 most banned.
Where is it now? 15? How dare we let children know that girls can have periods and that you're allowed to pick a religion?
You know, honestly, I feel like it's the religion that gets it banned more often than the periods.
Like I alluded to earlier, like, I knew of Judy Blume growing up and I never read her. And it's probably because my mom just quietly kept them away from me.
She also wrote a follow-up to after the popularity of this, that was from a boy's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you the...
I think I know which one you're talking about. Because that was, like, the one piece of trivia I read, and I didn't even think it was interesting enough to write down, was the clerk at the drugstore was named after the male character from the follow-up.
Yes.
Like Todd or Tom or something.
Tony Miglioni.
Tony, yeah. His name is Tony.
It's called Then Again, Maybe I Won't.
Yeah, no, I didn't read that one.
It is a 12-year-old boy who's also going through puberty.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So, do you recommend this seminal piece of children's fiction?
It is not seminal.
This periodic piece of children's fiction.
Seminal in importance, not seminal in the other meaning. Yes, absolutely. The version I read was like 176 pages. It is a breeze to read. I think it took me like 3 hours, maybe. Judy Blume is just a delight. She has a deft hand when dealing with darker topics. And if you haven't read her before, I highly recommend it. Beverly Cleary, that's who I was confusing her with.
Oh my god, yes. Yes.
I always thought Ramona and Beezus and Fudge were the same author, but they're not.
I know I read Beverly Cleary as a kid.
Yeah.
I absolutely did. This movie is one of the best family movies ever made, and I say that without hyperbole. It's up there with Paddington 2. And I'm not alone in... You laugh, but Paddington 2 for a while had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. This has a 99. With an average score of, I think, 8.4. This is one of the best family movies ever made. It is 102 minutes. It's a fucking breeze. I could watch this with my mom, and my mom would maybe object, maybe, to the little girl saying, "I don't believe in God," but would be okay with it when she later talks to God again. Like, that's it. Like, it's... What a piece of art for kids that I thoroughly enjoyed as a grown-ass man. Loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it, loved it. Loved it. Want to watch it with you, but I already took the DVD back to the library. So I have to wait till it's streaming somewhere. So I don't have anything more to say.
Oh, there is one other piece of trivia about the movie.
Oh, that it was the first theatrical adaptation of a Judy Blume novel.
Yes.
Yeah. Took them 50 fucking years. But they did it. They went and fucking did it.
Yeah.
Next time around, it didn't take them nearly as long to adapt this one. We're going to get a more modern, more male upbringing perspective.
It's in the 90s this time. Right?
No.
Is it the 90s?
I think it's later. I haven't read it or seen it.
Yes, you have.
That's next time after. Next is Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this one.
Yeah, so did I. Until I checked earlier. Now we're doing Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I remember when the movie came out because my mom wanted to see it. Because it was one of her reading list books. So
I feel like my nephew was the right age for these. Because I feel like we got him some.
For sure. No, I know who you're talking about.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, it was a little past my time. But I'm interested to see the male perspective here. And if this will hold up to the legend that is Judy Blume.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm actually intrigued by this one. Because I did hear the movie's good, so...
We'll see. I have heard that it's good.
We'll see.
Bless you.
But until then... You can find us online. Our socials are in the link tree in the description of this podcast. And if you don't want to go there and look, it's it's linktr.ee/soonmajorpod. And you can find us on our Blue Sky and Twitter accounts there. Our Gmail account, soonmajorpod@gmail.com, is there as well. Be sure to send us your embarrassing sixth grade stories, or I will... come good with my threat.
You mean make good on your threat?
I said what I said. Listen, it's been an hour and a half. We've done a lot of talking. And now I need to do a lot of peeing. ¶¶